views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Tonight on this lovely Sunday evening, and happy Easter for those of you that are celebrating Easter on this day. And he rose on the third day. Oh, yes, Lord, on Calvary. I know y'all heard that sermon today, and you've probably been hearing it all your life, and you can say it yourself, but you're meant to go hear it again today, so good for you. Hercules, Hercules. So anyway, so happy Easter to everybody, and we just want to welcome you in here to the Lotus Place Radio Show tonight here on Black Talk Radio Network. We are live and in color, so you can call in and speak with us and share your comments, thoughts, and views. Let me just give out the number. Let me let you get your little pen and paper, because tonight we are talking about Black women in history. From antiquity to present, we'll just share a few clips from speaking on some women, Black and African women, Black African women in history. So call in 641-715-3660. That's 641-715-3660. And the participant code is 549032. Press pound. And if you would like to share a comment, press *61 and we will get you in. So in preparing for this show, I came across some really great clips. One that we will share will just kind of highlight like top 10 African warrior women like Nzinga. Also, we will share a clip on the Candaces. So stay tuned for those clips, as well as we'll hear from some of our contemporary sisters, one of our ancestors now, one who's passed on to the ancestors, Dr. Frances Crest Wellson. We'll also hear from Michelle Alexander, Angela Davis. We'll play a clip on Ida B. Wells, one of my super, super, super favorites. I love Ida B. Wells. Rereading her autobiography now. And if you have not read anything on Ida B. Wells, or simply watch the DVD, you know, everything is on YouTube now. You can purchase the DVD. You can go on YouTube and watch, I think it's like maybe about an hour and 30 minutes biography on Ida B. Wells. Super great. I have the DVD, but you can also watch that on YouTube. I think she's like, oh, such a very important woman to me, because she basically took on groups of people, monsters rather, that were lynching people. And lynchings were basically, people were trying to contain them or make it seem as if only the South were into the practice of lynching people. But Ida B. Wells conducted a study, and she went from north to south, east to west, and proved that these lynchings were taking place all across the United States, as they were then. And she actually had to go over to Great Britain to try to bring some women in to unite with her in fighting the lynchings that were occurring. And lynchings were so, so, so very, very brutal. Just Oh my God! If you have not, read, what is it? Oh gosh, it was on the tip of my tongue. Without Sanctuary. Check that book out. I mean, you know, I know people don't want to read about lynchings or see the lynching pictures, but it's history. Because trust me, Jewish people, they always telling their children about the 6 million Jews that got killed and all of this and all of that. Not trying to discount anybody's history, but we need to know our history. I find that there's so many people that are amazed at things that are happening today, but a lot of these things, they're not new, the killings. None of this is new. So we've had women in history that have tried to enlighten us, that have tried to move us forward, like Harriet Tubman, Ida B. Wells, Frances Ellen Harper. Love Frances Ellen Harper. She was a woman that could have passed for white. And the women suffragists tried to sway her to support women's rights over the black vote, over black men obtaining the vote. Frances Ellen Harper was one of those 19th century women that said, race first. Race first. She was of the quote-unquote black intelligentsia, and they would have these meetings, which I wish that we as black people would continue. They would have these meetings and discuss how can they improve the lot of African black people, of colored people, as we were called at that time. And so they would have these discussions, these intelligentsia meetings, and they would actually plan different activities and actions that they would take, and so they were all on the same page, versus everybody just being scattered out trying to do all of this different stuff, and nobody's really getting anything done because nobody's networking together. People working in their own silos now, and in some areas back then, people were more so working together. You had people that knew each other, like Ida B. Wells, working with Frederick Douglass and W.E.B. Du Bois, things like that. So we want to highlight some of these great women. And we're not leaving you men now. We're just recognizing Women's History Month. Because when I Googled National 2016 Women's History Month, I noticed that there was only like one black woman list, maybe two. And then they can't include like a Native American lady and let me see, a Native American lady on the list, some of the honorees. I want to say there was maybe a Mexican woman, but I didn't see enough black women. You know, I want to see some black women because you know we have accomplished so many things. I mean, we could just go the rest of the year talking about the accomplishments of black women. So what we will do here tonight is we will highlight some of those women. So let's go into some quick hot topics. And welcome in, King B. How are you?
Oh, just fine. Just fine. How's everybody doing?
All is well. All is well, King B. Thank you for joining us tonight. So, King B, up there in your area, one of my hot topics, the district attorney, Ken Taylor, who was the district attorney in the case for the Akai Gurley case.
That's right.
And he was supposed to be prosecuting Peter Lane, the so-called rookie officer who was doing the vertical patrols in the pink housing projects there in Brooklyn,
right,
where you are. Mm-hmm. And apparently, Peter Lane and his partner, they weren't supposed to be conducting these vertical checks anyway. And then you walking around, you conducting these vertical checks with your gun drawn and your hand on the trigger, because when Akai Gurley and his girlfriend came through the stairwell, so he jumps and just shoots him. He tried to pretend like he was scared, but I don't even believe that. It doesn't matter whether you were afraid or not. First of all, you should not have been doing the vertical checks. Number two, you should not have had your gun drawn, okay, because you're not out in the wild hunting deer or rabbit or whatever. So you should not have had your gun drawn in the first damn place. So shoots a Kai Gurley. He says that he fired a shot, and then the bullet ricocheted and it shot a Kai Gurley. Right. And then instead of him calling 911 immediately, what does he do, King B?
He calls up the union and try to find out if he's going to be fired.
Exactly.
And you see, they lied about him not being properly trained to give CPR.
CPR. Mm-hmm.
That was a bald-faced lie. You don't graduate unless you know all of the above.
Right. And if you felt like you didn't, if you felt like you didn't know CPR, then you should have enrolled in another class. All it takes is what, I think, 5 hours. You can do it online, or you can just Google it. He could have Googled that shit on his phone.
But that he shot a human being, but his racist mentality world, blacks are not human.
That's right.
And that's why Eric Garner could be choked, hold, and to death, because he wasn't seen as a human. The man said 11 times, "I can't breathe." But getting to the DA, Ken Thompson, I didn't know until Michael Gray, if I call him Big Mike, who's one of the hosts of Community Cop, coming every Tuesday, told me the sordid background of this guy, Ken Thompson. You know, his client was thrown under the train. This was this woman from Guinea who was raped by a DSK.
Mm.
Remember that story?
DSK
was he was head of the international, he was head of IMF. And he was known to be a sex fiend. And when he flies Air France, they would have to make sure they'd be an all male flight crew, because he would be heavy with the hands with the flight stewardess.
Oh, wow.
Or the flight attendant. So, this DSK, he saw this. He wanted to make sure that he had a maid that was well-rounded. And it was a setup. But she had been assured that the room was empty before before she went into the room. She went into the room, and there he was coming out butt-naked and wanted to attack her. And
I remember now.
All right. The only reason why the grand jury became a runaway jury was because they saw her medical record. All right. But her lawyer was Ken Thompson, came from the Bronx. He wheeled and dealed where he came into Brooklyn and joined his church called CCC, which stands for Christian Cultural Center, headed by a former Muslim named A.R. Bernard. He wheels and deals and get under Bernard's wing. And next thing he knows, he set up a meeting where he has this client from Guinea that he wants to take her down as far as throwing her under the train for the job as DA of Brooklyn. Black folks not knowing this guy's background. This clown, lowlife, he gets the job because Charles Hines was to be taken out by the oligarchy. They wanted to take him out, but they wanted to make sure that who is his successor would be a good boy, a conniving good boy. Mm-hmm. So now he gets to become DA. He has yet to put away a law officer who breaks the law, including a law officer who shot and killed a man right down the block from where I live, an unarmed man named Shim Walker. He has another retired correctional officer who kills an unarmed passenger on the platform at the downtown Brooklyn, called Borough Hall of downtown Brooklyn. He refused to indict that cop. Matter of fact, he ran on the platform to indict this cop who killed Shim Walker. We never knew the name of the killer cop who killed Shim Walker in cold blood. Shot the man in the chest in cold blood. All right? Then we had the situation where this retired detective had falsified records to put black men away who were innocent. Some served 28 years. All right? And every time he's come up with these cases, these guys, these defendants are found not guilty from Thompson going over their record. And the cases are thrown out. They're being released. So, but anyway, getting up to this Gurley case, he had an assistant that was very good with getting the jury to be convinced that this cop is guilty as charged. He's convicted. Mm-hmm. And he, Thompson came out with his very convincing performance, how glad he was. He was pleased with the results. He said, anyone who's found guilty, you're never going to be found too big to do the time with me. I'm for justice, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And this was a classic case that he's for justice. Well, what do we hear a few weeks before the judge gives the verdict? He wants to tell the judge now, which is unprecedented. He wants to give the judge his feeling that this cop didn't mean it, and he shouldn't go to jail, shouldn't do any time. He should get maybe a community service and I think about 5-6 months of probation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the family is living.
Arrest.
Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah. Thank you. And that family is living, you know, they felt betrayed. Now, the man who's leading the demonstration supporting the mother, he's highly questioned. His name is Charles Barron, a known con artist who sucks in the same nipple as Sharpton. And they threatened to shut down the town. They threatened to shut down the town, all this stuff. But I'm telling you, Ken Thompson is, I'm going to tell you this also, folks. Ken Thompson was the lawyer for this woman from Guinea. She got out of court $5 million because the jury was the runaway grand jury because they saw her medical record where she had a dislocated shoulder and trauma to the vagina. And they know that she didn't come to work that way. Well, don't you know, she got $5 million. This clown took 40%.
40%.
40%.
Mm-hmm.
And no one from the mainstream media made any commentary about that. That's why the mainstream media is very, very, very dangerous. Because black folks, when they do hear the so-called news, they don't know they're being played.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody takes black folks for not only second class, but third class fools.
Mm.
And that's why Hillary is taking medication to keep from laughing so hard because she's black to such suckers. They don't mind being played on. And her record is clear. She was, shall always be, and was always an enemy to black people, her and Bill. So now, we get this situation now where it's unprecedented that a DA, before the judge hands out his sentencing, will tell the judge, don't do it. It is unprecedented. So watch the scenario, y'all. Ken Thompson is, as far as I'm concerned, a one-term DA. And black folks, the only thing we want with black folks in this town, even though we're the majority, black people have selective amnesia. And we will punish our friends and reward our enemy. So whatever he's going to do between buttering up these pastors, who are most of these pastors are useless because they're clueless, rendering them to be useless, and most of them have morphed into becoming ecclesiastical pimps. So watch this scenario when the judge gives the sentencing to his killer cop, already convicted. But this clown and Ken Thompson has decimated the situation where this clown could walk.
Yeah, he could very, very well walk. And you know, Kenty, it's been said by some of the people from what I read, that are familiar with the case, that the Asian community influenced him because, you know, his mother, Peter Lang's mother, who owns like some property there in Brooklyn, she had a darn fundraiser, okay, for her son. So I bet you, I would be willing to bet that some of that money went to pay off that DA.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's what me and Mother Hattie. Mother Hattie's on the line with us. Hey, Mother
Hattie. Mother Hattie.
Hello.
Hey, all right.
And Delta Cougar's on the line with us.
Oh, Delta.
Hey, Delta Cougar.
Hey,
Candy.
Hey,
Miss. Hey, we got high hopes
on
the line.
Hey, Icy Hot.
Oh.
Yeah.
So what do you think, Mother Hattie?
Oh, well,
a Cat Gurley and Peter Lane case. Whereas the DA Ken Thomas, is it Thomas or Thompson?
Thompson.
Well, I think it'll happen. What always happens? The same thing that's happening here in Minnesota. with Jamar, the young man that was handcuffed, and yeah. Mm-hmm. So
handcuffed in the precinct.
It was at the alleged domestic disturbance where they handcuffed. Mm-hmm.
Well, you see,
and the police just told the people yesterday, this is Sunday, no, Friday, they were, don't come here protesting because we're not going to have it. Well, the people went and protested anyway.
Good. I mean, how dare they?
And
see, that's what it takes.
They marched Saturday to, the Black Lives Matters and some of the community people, so.
Good. What they're gonna do
with that. Well, we already know what y'all been doing all over the country with this stuff.
There is no
justice. Gonna start now.
There's no justice. It's just for justice for just us. Us whites.
Right. That's what Richard Pryor told us years and years ago. Richard Pryor said, hey, you go down, ain't nobody there but just us.
That's it.
Yes.
And he said something else also that black people should never forget. He said, the white man said so. It must be true. We don't dare contradict it when the white man said so. Now, this mother of this this killer cop, Lane, is that name? Lane?
Yeah.
She owns property. And I told you, if this D.A. Thompson, who was the lawyer representing the woman from Guinea, she won $5 million, and he took 40%. Money is his master.
Who took 40%?
The law, the DA who was formerly the lawyer for this woman from Guinea, she won a $5 million damage.
And he was a lawyer, and now he's a DA.
He cut a deal where he came from the Bronx, and moved into Brooklyn and maneuvered at this church that has a serious ecclesiastical pimp who's a former Muslim. And the church is it's called CCC, but it's really called a Christian Culture Center.
That's really interesting there. Is this a person of African descent or Caucasian? Or?
Oh, the pastor?
No, the DA.
Yeah, the DA is African. I've met him and talked to him. Mm. He seemed to be real cool, you know, but I didn't know his sordid background until Big Mike, who's host the show called Community Cop. It's not syndicated, so you can hear it on where you are. But
You can go on the computer and hear it, can't you? I think I'm going to have to start listening to
him. It's on every Tuesday at 5 p.m. slot. And it's on the community television station called Manhattan Network Cable. It's called Community Cop. And he said to me that Ken Thompson wheeled and dealed his way once he got into Brooklyn. He had a meeting where the oligarchy that runs the Democratic Party wanted to get rid of Charles Hines, because Charles Hines was supposed to have been indicted because he would take drug dealers' money and use their money for his re-election.
I've heard it all, I hear some more about New York. Hey. Goodness gracious. Yeah.
So what happened was that they wanted some stooge that would be a player and would just give the facade that he's for justice, but his record.
Go along with the program.
Yeah, there you go. Earl Caldwell, a veteran journalist, he said once on WBAI, which is on the Pacific Radio, he said, you are what your record say you are. That's why black folks need to be impeached for being so deaf, dumb, and blind when the record of the Clintons will tell them that the Clintons shall always be and will always be their worst enemy.
Mm. Well, let's let Delia come on with her hot topics so we can move on into the show topics.
So, Delta, come on with your hot topics. What do you have for us tonight? Did you go to church for your Easter service?
Oh, well, y'all gonna stone me today, because take a guess what?
You didn't
go out.
Oh, my
no,
God.
No, I didn't go out
well,
to my Easter.
Hey, you gave your seat to the hypocrites. They don't go to church all year long. You gave your seat to the hypocrites.
And I know there's no excuse, but it was raining so hard here.
The Christmas, Mother's Day, and Easter people.
That is.
They wanted to come to church on the CME.
Mother's Day and Easter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I stayed in. Because I knew we start Revival on Monday night. So I said,
don't try to make no excuses now. Don't try to know. You need to go get your Jesus.
Did you go get some of that Jesus in you today?
No, ma'am. No. I went and got some spirituality in me today, though.
Damn.
I ain't going to get no Jesus. Mm-hmm.
I said, thank you,
that I can wake up in my bed and be comfortable and get in my vehicle and move around and have some food to eat and enjoy my family. That's what I did.
Yeah. Well, I know Issa Hot got out today. Didn't you, Issa Hot?
You know what? I'm out every Sunday where I'm supposed to be.
That's right. See, Issa Hot gets out there. She goes get her Jesus.
What about
baby.
You, Canty?
Well,
get my fuel for the week.
Yeah.
For the next couple of days until it's Bible study.
Right.
My church has an organic ministry, and we don't order no artificial. There's no artificial additives. Where it's entertainment. No, pun intended. I just know that the Riverside Church is out there when no one else is out there dealing with injustice. All black churches down in the valley in Harlem won't dare hold a memorial service honoring Dr. King. Riverside not only had Dr. King to come to that church when in 1967 he gave his while he was against the war in Vietnam, April 4th, 1968, he was assassinated by this government. And there's not one black pastor that's at the cojones. Ask your pastor next time you see him, how come we never had a memorial service honoring Dr. King's assassination? They will honor his birth. And you tell your piece of pastor why it's more important to honor his death. It's because he served communion to your church once a month for commemorating the death of Christ. Was there ever a black leader more Christless than Dr. King? He took the abuse not only from white folks, but from blacks as well. When King came out against the war in Vietnam, 60% of the black population or more turned their backs on Dr. King. That's something that we would be condemned for the rest of our lives, because Dr. King was proven to be correct. He was, so what they use, absolved of being wrong on the wrong side. And that black folks still never, just to honor Dr. King for how courageous he was and how foolish we were, we would not, there's not one black church in Harlem and across the Harlems in New York City on out to the Deep South, Midwest, not one black pastor holds a memorial service honoring Dr. King's death. And this is an indictment against the black pastors, the members of the Progressive Baptist, especially them, because Dr. King founded the Progressive Baptist because he was so fed up with these bootlicking Uncle Toms, head of the National Baptist Convention.
Let's take a break. Kenzie, we need to take a break.
Sure.
We need to let Delta come on into our hot topic so we can get into our show. We have a caller, so we want to make sure we get our callers in and talk about black African women in her story. All right, so let's take a quick break, and we will be right back. So, Delta, we want to hear what you have for your hot topic tonight, so stay tuned. You're listening to The Lotus Place.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Thank you. This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
I think what you're trying to ask is, why am I so insistent upon giving out to them that blackness, that black power, that black pushing them to identify with black culture? I think that's what you're asking. I have no choice over it. In the first place, to me, we are the most beautiful creatures in the whole world, black people. I mean, and I mean that in every sense, outside and inside. And to me, we have a culture that is surpassed by no other civilization, but we don't know anything about it. So again, I think I said this before in this same interview, I think at some time before, my job is to somehow make them curious enough or persuade them by hook or crook to get more aware of themselves and where they came from and what they are into and what is already there, and just to bring it out. This is what compels me to compel them. And I will do it by whatever means necessary. When I'm finished working, as tired as I am, and my work completely takes all my energy, unfortunately, but when there are kids who come backstage afterwards, who want to talk, or who are moved to the point, sometimes they're moved to tears, I want to know more about it, and they shake my hand, and they kiss me, and they want to talk about their problems. I find the time to do so as much as I can. I discourage breakfasts and speeches because I don't make speeches, but I will go out of my way, in spite of the fact that I'm too tired to do it, to talk to them at least for 5 minutes or so, to sock to them the same message that I just finished doing on stage, and perhaps to hear some of their grievances, or just to make them feel that they're not alone. Because when you have a few colored kids in a huge white college, any way you cut it, they are alienated and they feel it. So when I come, I feel a responsibility. They're so glad to see me because I represent something to them, and I can't give them enough, you know. They need me. They need me. And when I'm needed, I have to give. I curse myself afterwards for having no voice, usually, and being so exhausted that I can't do anything for myself. But when they need me for, and the most important thing is, they are our future. It's an investment as far as I am concerned. When I invest time and young people from colleges, I know that I'm going to get that bread back. You know, bread cast upon the water comes back. Because when I see them doing their thing one day and I'm too old to do anything but sit and look at them, I'm going to say, well, I was part of that. I never intend for my children to look at me and be ashamed and say, Mama, why didn't you do something? I will have done mine.
Pathways of my mind.
And so every time I talk to them, it's an investment.
Yes, and that was one of my favorites as well. Nina Simone, I love when she says her job is to make them curious enough to become more aware of themselves.
Yes, yes.
And sharing the message with black children, taking the time to invest in those children. And that is so important.
Let me ask you something, Black Rose. You think Beyonce could, shall we say, have an evolution where she could end up like Nina Simone?
I think anything is possible. And before I saw her recent video,
Black Panther?
Yeah, I argued with another young lady, and I said, oh, Beyonce will never say anything about stop killing black people. So I had to come back and say, oh, my, I was wrong. So I think that anything is possible. I think that we should evolve. I know that Beyonce became a vegetarian a couple of years ago, and that's why I promote healthy living, because her mind has become a little more cleaner, it seems, and she's thinking like a rock star. She's making statements. So I think she possibly can. Maybe she won't evolve to the point that we would like to see her evolve to. However, I mean, she's coming along a little bit, maybe. So,
yeah.
Who knows?
Well, you compare, who knows? Nina Simone came out like a bullet.
I don't think anybody just, you know, reached that level of, like, a Nina Simone or let's see, who else could we say? Or Paul Robeson. I don't know if these entertainers today could reach that level. You know, David Banner, he's kind of outspoken. He's a rapper, and he makes comments. Talib Kweli, who, let me see, what I think he used to sing with, I forgot that other hip-hop group, but I really like Talib Kweli, and he's pretty active. You know, John Legend, he makes some statements, and he's a little active. So we may see some of these people evolve. But come on, Dale, to give us some hot topics so we can get into our show.
Yes, well, we got a case, y'all, up in Milwaukee. And I know y'all said don't be talking about killing, but we must talk about this case,
y'all. We don't want to hear nothing about nobody getting killed and shot in the head, though, Dale. But, I mean, come on with this story. But, again, we can't keep talking about people who got shot in the head and all that, because that's depressing. And, you know, we're trying to uplift and move people to a different level. But, I mean, if it's the case that, you know, you want to share and make sure we know about, I think that's great. But we're not going to hop on who got shot in the head.
Okay. Well, the reason it startled me and made me talk about it, because it's a brother and sister. Mm-hmm. And they got killed just a month apart. And they both got killed by other people of color.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we must talk about it in our community. It's other people of color. And they both was killed. They got in a dispute with people in their neighborhood. So the reason I bring this up all the time here, how can we change it? What can we do? And I know we sat on the radio and talked about it, but what are some solutions for our neighborhood, for our kids to be not so violent towards each other,
I'll tell you something. You got Hillary Clinton talking about going to kill people and have wars. This is what they see until you got Donald Trump talking about building a gate to keep people out and killing Muslims. So I mean, this is what they see. So, I mean, what do we expect from the children?
But it's
this is a bellicose, war-mongering nation that we live in. So I don't know why people think that our children are not supposed to see this violence. That's all that's on TV. People talk about gays on TV and kissing. I'm pissed off about all the shooting and the violence and the killing on TV.
And listen, you got rogue cops that are gun running and bringing in not only the guns but the cartridges.
Mm-hmm.
And these kids who are so full of self-hatred, have no knowledge of self. There's a diabolical combination that can bring on, let the niggas kill each other. Do us a favor.
So, I mean, you know, we're surrounded by violence, though, Delta. And see, my thing is, one reason why, again, I say I can't even take constantly hearing about who got killed and shot is, you know what, my main reason, other than it's depressing to me, but my other reason, like Brother Brown said 2 years ago, when they killed Eric Gardner and then turned around and killed Mike Brown, what y'all gonna do? Y'all ain't gonna do nothing. You're not gonna do nothing, because guess what? They're gonna kill somebody else tomorrow or the day after that. And what are you going to do? What you going to do? So I'm sick of talking about it. Because black folks ain't going to do nothing but go to the courthouse and rally and hump and stomp and march and get in front of a microphone and yell and talk about what they going to do and what should happen. And then guess what? It's all over and done with.
there. And
so until we change,
yeah,
nothing else is going to change.
See, there's no formulation for an economic boycott even. It's off the table. As Sharpton and Jesse Jackson and what's his name, the guy who's former head of the NAACP, Ben Jealous. Trayvon Martin.
Yeah.
Black people don't even want to use this. Let the dollars do the talking. We're the biggest spenders.
They're not going to do nothing. Because I guarantee you, people want to spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars on food for this holiday. So, I mean, so what? So, I mean, why are we going to keep talking about who shot who and black people killing black? Yeah, I guarantee you, like Dick Gregory say and everybody else say, some Asians killed some Asians. Some Mexicans killed some Mexicans the other night. Some Irish people killed some more Irish people in Ireland, and so on and so on. So, I mean, you know, that's just how I feel about it.
And this is a violent world that we're in. It's violent all the way around.
It's violent. And for those children that are killing each other or people that are killing each other, we have on the opposite end of the spectrum, we have people that are fighting to make sure that our children stay safe and stay out of prison, get a good education, have food on the table, and have a career to grow into. And I think those are some things that we can focus our energy on. But I know, Delta, you like your tales of the crypt. You like your stories about who got shot. So, I mean, I get it.
But she did promise to say she was going to give us some positive, too. So she got some positives along with it.
So, let's hear a positive so we can get into our show, please.
Okay. Well, this young lady, we have a young man out of Atlanta. His name is David, young black man. Mm-hmm. He was making cakes in his home.
Mm-hmm.
And he started getting really good at it. So he started making wedding cakes, and he got so popular in Atlanta that everybody started using him.
Oh.
Somebody took one of his wedding cakes and sent it, like Oprah Winfrey saw one of his wedding cakes. They featured him in a little local magazine, and Oprah Winfrey saw some stuff that he had done. And she got him to do something, and she talked about him, and she featured him. Where it was just him making it in his kitchen, and the young man, he was no more than 21 years old. And he had became his business where he was making like maybe $5,000 or $6,000, $10,000 a year. That's all. Now, since he have got some spotlight on his business, his business is grossing over $100,000 or more a year.
Wow!
And he ain't but 21 years old.
I love
making wedding cakes.
Now that's what we talking about.
Exactly. So he can have that business. And then he can open up another business.
And then
he opened up
a business and he hired employees.
Exactly. Now, see, that's what I love. Thank you so much, Delta. For those topics.
Early gift entrepreneur.
That's right. Let's take this caller and then we have another clip to play. Let's see. Caller is 612-419. Thank you for holding.
Wow, I was wondering if you was going to ever get to me. I really enjoy. This is James from Spokane. Hello, family.
Hey,
brother James.
How you doing?
Fine.
Greetings, everybody. So nice to hear New York on the line. And as far as my young years go, I do think that we need to be educated from the East Coast on all the way out, from the Midwest to the West to the South and, you know, to the North. Something about the East Coast that's powerful. And if we study signs and symbols, we always hear about the East for some reason. I just want to say that I'm giving props to New York, and I'm from Pittsburgh. I'm from Pittsburgh, PA myself, but I'm living in Spokane, one of the most racist places I've ever been in my in my short time that I've been here. But I want to start by saying I'm going back to Dorothy, asking the question, what can we do about the negative and the positive, even going towards the brother who's doing the cakes. You know, when we learn to love ourselves and each other, all those things will be taken care of. You know, P. Diddy did a tweet, you know, after he spoke to Minister Farrakhan, oh, we need to learn how to love ourselves and each other. I mean, that's a given. Who's saying that we don't? You know, the bottom line is we don't take the initiative to show it and do it without somebody's permission. We wait for somebody to tell us what to do because that's the way we've been trained. That's the way we've been indoctrinated. I grew up in a family with my grandmother, my grandfather, my mother, my father, my aunts, my uncles, my brothers, my sister, and my cousins all in one house. So it wasn't about somebody telling us what we do. We taught each other. I was the youngest. And now I tell my older brother and sister, I'm the youngest out of three, that I'm the wisest because I learned from your mistakes. Wow. I didn't have to get instruction. I looked. I paid attention.
Like my dad says, you don't have to always go out and box your head to learn something. You can observe and watch other people and listen
to wise people. This is true. But my point is, go ahead.
The institution that we always had control of, and it's a very poor pastor that can't get more than 10 members to listen to him on any given Sunday. The church was the gathering place where the pastor would give us soul-stirring sermons, but if he didn't want to do it on a Sunday, maybe throughout the week, he would have a forum where he would have people come in to speak to us about what has to be done for concerns about liberation and justice causes. We don't have pastors that are out there willing to show what they meant when they say, for God I'll live and for God I'll die, and that they are ambassadors for Christ. We have too many pastors that are taking money from politicians who are bought and paid for and know their place. They're not going to upset the apple cart. Not going to upset the apple cart. So there's a problem now.
Put it all up? And I have to go to what Mother Hattie says. Now, should we put all of the blame on pastors, or should it be a community issue?
No, it's a family issue. And I just want to jump in because, again, you know what? We're the ones who sitting in these churches. We don't have to sit there. Yeah. We go there by choice. If they ain't doing what, just like the politicians, if they ain't doing what they're supposed to do, scrap them. Scrap them. Get rid of them. And if they don't get, if you can't get rid of them, then leave and go somewhere where it's working. You know? And the church is us as a family. Every second, every minute, every hour. I ain't talking about no building. I'm talking about us loving each other. Because if it was more black men and black women loving each other, that brother be doing 10 million a year. And not enough of us is getting married. Okay? Because brothers, young brothers be wondering, how am I going to take care of a family? I ain't got no job. I ain't got no education. I ain't got, always talking about what they don't have. But we don't have anything because our elders don't talk to us. They don't teach us. They don't give us to, they don't pass down the skill. Okay?
And let's not forget it was Hillary supporting mass incarceration that we are still not out of the damage done with mass incarceration. So when brothers come out of jail, they have no skills, they're coming back into a community that is already uptight with not able to, stress out, they can't provide them with anything, including a decent shelter, no jobs. So what are they coming back into the community for when there's nothing there for them? But to get into more crime, stay high, and end up in jail again. So we can thank the Clintons for that because she and her husband, they took away welfare as we knew it. They were advocates of mass incarceration. Certainly the advocate for the death penalty. So we talk
and
about
do you know Do you know where they came up with that as well? I think we have to be very honest, too. I can tell you that the black communities across this nation, leaders, were complaining about the situations in the neighborhoods where the gangbangers were doing this and getting away with it. They called that out. They called it out. Let's be honest here now.
It's true. It's
they came up with their own idea. Let's just mass incarcerate. They were responding to what we, what black leadership and black communities were saying. And let me say this though. We all know that they created, not them particularly. I'm not saying Hillary and Bill. I'm saying this nation created. See, what they do is they create these situations and scenarios to get you to call out and cry out for help for all this mess in the neighborhoods that goes down. And they create the crisis so they can come and save it. That's the natural way they operate. It's just play number one. They got the same old play all the time.
But
I'm still going to say, we keep falling for the okie doke. We got to all take some responsibility for this. So we can't just say, Hillary and Bill this, Hillary. No, you should have been taking your own damn community in the first place.
Look. Michelle Alexander, in her magnificent essay, it was in the Nation magazine. She said, it's titled Black Lives Shattered. And she said that the leaders were calling out against what was going on in the black community, but they wanted to have a program where they would get some funding to get job training, to get the housing situation fixed up. A lot of the things for healing the community.
We do pay taxes and we should get funding, but who in the hell is gonna, whose enemy is gonna fund them to save themselves? Come on. We should find our own damn selves.
So, Brother Brown, let me see if the caller has anything else to say, and then we'll take Brother Brown and we'll move into a clip.
Hey, Brown.
So call it.
Hey, how you doing?
Any more comments, caller?
Hey, Brother Brown.
Good evening.
Caller, did you have any another comment for Mother Dunning's hot topic?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
And that is a solution.
Okay.
The solution I've already shared with Sister Hattie and Sister Dorothy, and that is there's a brother that is he's the ad hoc universal world court judge, and he's working with 198 nations, and he's told not ask. These people are telling the world governments, restore everything to the people, everything. And don't take my word for it. I'll give you the website. It's SOV. S is in Sam. O is in oven. V is in victory. CPR, like you bringing somebody back to life, CPR, SOV, CPR.com. You could get on there and listen to the calls. They got archived calls. You can get on and talk to the brother personally on Wednesday morning. Everything's on our website. Everything. I'm literally impressed. I didn't know much about it, but I went to Texas 3 weeks ago and got indexed. And basically, you taking yourself out of this system that we sitting here complaining about right now, taking yourself completely out of it,
okay?
And you signing up to a new nation. All I can say is, man, I got my father index. He's 91 going on 92. And you can get people in the penitentiary index.
And when you say index, what are you speaking of in specifically? Specifically, what are you speaking of when you say index?
Okay, who am I answering?
This is Black Rose.
Black Rose, can I just ask you to check it out for yourself? Because I could give you my perspective, and I don't want to do it no disservice.
Okay.
I went down and did it because I love my elder and I trust him. You know what I mean? And all I can tell you is that I'm high. I'm literally high. Okay, I met people from New York all the way to California. The whole, I was there for 4 days. I got 2 hours a day rest. That's how much love was in that hotel. Mm-hmm. And it's free. It don't cost a dime. But you got to go to Texas, Dallas, Texas, because it's the only sovereign territory in the Americas.
Okay, well, I'm in Houston, Texas, so I will look into that.
Oh, my God. Sister, you will be in for a treat. And you could go on YouTube. I went on YouTube and listened to a more radio station do an interview. Because some of my family, when I talk to them about it, well, what is this? How long have they been doing it? And what is indexing? And how does these trusts work? And asking me nauseating questions. And I ask them, please, do the research for yourself. We got to stop wanting to, jump on the messenger, and do some research for ourselves. The love is there. It's already been taking place, and we keep talking about what we don't have. Let's talk about what we do have, and get on board and work together, and connect these dots. Because all those that think they empower, the Al Sharptons and the Jesse Jacksons and whoever, it's not about them being in power. We are the ones in power, And one of the things that I could tell you that this organization is asking is learn the Constitution.
Well, you know what, and that's I like when you mention that, learn the Constitution, because you have groups of these white men that keep that Constitution in their pocket.
Woo, yes, ma'am. Yes,
they
ma'am.
They walk around with it. They will pull it out on you in a minute.
And it works. That's the bottom line. And if it works for them, why won't it work for us? It's the same words. And the bottom line is, when you go down and get indexed, oh my God, when you hear all the things that go along with it, I'm sure you'll be spreading it and sharing it with your loved ones. And these calls are going to get larger, because again, when we find something that's good, we advertise for people for free every day. For Nike, for coffee, for tea, for gas, for clothes, for purses, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to start having, we need to have buying and selling strategies for ourselves. There's nothing stopping us. I watched, for example, I watched the Savior's Day with Minister Farrakhan this year.
And
he was talking about how we don't even know where our food come from, or if it's fresh, or who sent it, and what's in it. And it's true. But the flip side of that is I was listening to one of the calls on this SOVCPR.com, and the lady who hosted, she started talking about an international program about food, plant food, right? If you only got a 3x3 piece of dirt in your area, plant food, plant something. And it's,
you can plant it on your patio. People are planting on their rooftops. They have different communities where they're creating gardens on top of their buildings.
I lived in Minnesota for 20 years, and I drove a school bus. That's how I learned my way around Minnesota. And, all the Hmong and Asian people, Vietnamese, they, no matter where they live, they were growing food.
Absolutely. No matter where they live. We need to go into a break. And so thank you so much for the information. And so we have the website, and you said it's SOVCPR.com.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. We will check that out. Thank you. So let's take a quick break. And we will come right back after this break. And I think Brother Brown has a comment, right, Brother Brown? Hey, Brother Brown. All right, so let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com. Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio, new black media for the new millennium.
All right, and so tonight we are talking about black women in history. That is the topic. That's what we want to discuss, black women in history. So we're highlighting the Candaces and our Nubian warriors, people like Ida B. Wells, Dr. Francis Cress Wells. And I want to play this clip after Brother Brown makes his comment. Dr. Francis Cress Wells is speaking about Tim Wise and how Tim Wise is deceiving or has deceived the black community. I see all of these black women that are so into Tim. You know, black women love to sit here and listen to what some white man got to tell them. And so some of these black women, and they take it like it's the gospel. And so Tim Wise is this white guy that speaks on like racism and white people and all of this stuff. Okay, so my thing with Tim Wise is, first of all, you making money off of us, come to tell us how your people treat us. Like, we don't know that. Like, we haven't experienced it, and we don't live it every day. And so he's giving lectures and having these speaking engagements talking about racism. But you got, like, Dr. Francis Cress Wells that has been talking about this for years. Amos Wilson. I mean, we can just go down the line. We have so many people that have written books on this and given numerous lectures that have expounded on this topic for years. But then Dr. John Henry Clark, Dr. Ben, I mean, so many people. But then we want to sit here and, Tim Wise, he's telling the truth. Oh, that white man is telling the truth. Please, give me a break. I can't take it. And so Dr. Frances Cress Wells, she really lays out what the whole deal is with all of that. I'm not trying to tell anybody don't listen to Tim Wise. I'm just saying, I don't need to listen to him because I don't need for him to tell me how we've been treated and abused. Brother Brown, what say you?
Yeah, I just want to say very quickly that, you know, and I listened to the comments about Hillary and that stuff that happened back when Bill was president. Now, we have to understand one thing, is that the incarceration of the black male is by design. Yeah. Okay, and in order to fight that, what we have to understand is that we, meaning the black community, the elders of the community, have to develop something to keep our young men out of jail. Mm-hmm. We can, I mean, I I've been living on this planet for 62 years. I get sick and tired of us at this stage in the game continuing to try to think that somebody of another ethnic background, number one, is going to be so sympathetic to our causes in America that they're going to just drop a magic wand and erase and eradicate all of the things that we have done. And I agree wholeheartedly with Mother Abby. Where is our responsibility? We look at the Farrakhan. Let me tell you something about that. Nobody has given accountability for the first million man march money with all those millions of dollars. Nobody has given that one accountability of not where that money went. Okay? And I mean, people were putting, I mean, they were filling up garbage bags full of money. And I don't mean $1 bill. So when we talk about the church is not doing nothing, like the brother said, we don't have to go there. People that do not have any accountability in the community, you don't have to support them. I don't talk about limitations. We had a gang problem up here one time, and I sent out 13 letters to all black churches stating that I would personally come and lecture these kids on gang-related affairs. I sent them all certified, paid for them. All I got back was a return call. Nobody called. Nobody said we invited to the church. So I didn't bother them anymore. I wrote them off. And that's what we have to start doing. Write these people off, develop a plan of our own, and utilize it. You know, I talked about education of our youth. You know, because we have the poorest test scores in the state of Maryland, the funds are accounted. Well, I just recruited 3 young people that's going to set up the library where I live at to teach these kids how to read. We can do things on that basis. We don't have to be a Umar Johnson, you know. And when you talk about the black women, I'm going to just interject that for you. It's a program started.
Mm-hmm.
The black woman in America has always been at the bottom of the totem pole. The bottom of the totem pole. And, you know, we have to, the responsibility for lifting our women up is the black male. Well, you know, we have to hold some, we have to hold ourselves accountable for the things that we do wrong. We don't take care of our children. I was with a brother last week who was trying to organize in Virginia. And he said, I got 7 kids. But you, and he said, I said, well, wait, you know, you don't have no, how can you take care of your kids if you're not working? You're not doing anything to show your own responsibility.
Right.
So we have to hold ourselves accountable. And as far as this election goes, it really don't matter to us. That's a white folks election. You understand me? We done went through 8 years of bullshit and didn't get nothing out of it but an African. I mean, let's be honest.
The rent's been raised up. I mean, Lord have mercy.
Yeah,
Lord.
We caught more hell in the last 8 years than we did with Bush.
Jesus. Oh, Lord have mercy. And another friend of mine, we were talking about that, how, I mean, over these 8 years, everything has just skyrocketed. Food went up. Rents went up. It's just ridiculous.
He brought the gas down a little bit, but shit, we don't own no gas station.
No, if we lived over there,
but we used to.
Right, that's what I'm saying. We used to have all of those.
I remember as a child there was 5 or 6 black-owned gas stations in my neighborhood in Kansas City, Missouri.
That's right. Now you can't find one.
Not one.
Now every gas station that's owned by these Arabs. They got the things that we support most: gas, liquor, and lottery.
Oh gosh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You understand me? We still trying to hit the lottery when we used to own the number rack.
Yes.
They stole that from us,
stole
and that was
the
hub. Right. That used to finance the black illegal numbers. Used to finance the Negro baseball league. We built our own parks. A friend of mine played with the Kansas City Monarchs. Damn sure did. And I'm saying, all that's gone. So we have to reinvent the wheel when it comes to economics and go right back to that. Knock off pocketbooks, buying clothes like that, and selling them. You know, and if they come at us, tell them somewhere, y'all don't give us no opportunities to buy wholesale, because those pocketbooks you're selling and make $300, I guarantee you Mace ain't paying $200 for those pocketbook, but we can't buy them. We want to own them, but we can't buy them. They locked us out. They have locked us out of every economic opportunity that we used to have. So we had to go back and create our own economic opportunity.
Absolutely.
They locked us out of education, create our own education.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
and
right.
We have to do just like we did going all the way back to Rosewood and Tulsa, Oklahoma. Black Wall Street. They couldn't utilize the white elements. They created their own. That's right. And you know, when you were talking about Nina Simone, let's not forget people like Mary Makeba.
Oh, yeah.
She was another actress from Africa. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
And she's playing Hugh Masekela. You know, they play together. You know, I was playing Hugh Masekela today. You know, but I'm just saying, these are African women, but one, you know, like I said, Dr. Francis Cress Wilson was not favored because we were, you know, we were personal friends, but, you know, you had Marimba Annie, who was very big. She's brilliant. Mm-hmm. And her, she wrote that book, The Rudu.
Yeah.
And she explains it on her, I have her video. And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, this sister is, you know, I mean, this sister is on point.
She's on point. She really is.
She don't cut no corners.
Not
you know,
at
when
all.
They had that thing up there for Francis Press Wilson, I think it was 2 weeks ago in D.C., I wasn't able to travel. And she was there, and I would have loved to have met her, but she was sickly, and she fell out. She fainted.
Mm.
And, you know, because I had a friend of mine that was there, they said she fainted. They had to take her out, but she came back, and she gave a hell of a speech.
Mm.
You know, and those sisters like that. And Dr. Wilson was a that hard.
Yes.
I don't care what video you get. I don't care where she spoke at. It's two things that she would tell you. Number one, white supremacy and racism is a system of global oppression. And number two, she told you what it controls. Labor, law, politics, economics, entertainment. These are the things that they control.
Mm-hmm.
And Amos Wilson did the same thing. But when you talk about the women, you had Ida B. Wells, you had Mary McLeod Bethune, who's a college named after her in Florida, Bethune-Cookman College.
Mm-hmm.
These were pioneers, you know. I live up here where Harriet Tubman was born at. And one day I just rode through there, you know, and the energy, the spiritual energy that's in Dorchester County, where she lived at, you can still, if you're a spiritual person, you can still feel those spirits. I did the same thing in Southampton County where Nat Turner was. So these energies that our ancestors have left for us, we have to learn how to tap into those energies. The negativity that we see, only we can change. White
yeah.
people are not going to ever change. Like you said earlier, white people are not going to change anything. And as for black men, step up to the plate and love your women. They're your women.
Mm-hmm.
They yours. And
well,
every woman, like I teach these young brothers this, you know, I said, just because you see a black woman that need help, that don't mean that you got to try to figure out how to go to bed with her.
Mm.
That don't mean that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I had a friend of mine, and he was in a situation, and him and this girl was in a relationship, and she got sick, and she had female trouble. And, you know, when he was down and out, she took him in. Soon as he got on his feet and that girl had female trouble, he left her. And I cussed him out. And I did. I told him, I said, how can you do that? And she don't want to have no sex no more. I said, let me tell you something, because I'm a little older than you. I said, there's going to come a time, the older you get, the less you're going to be able to perform. That's human nature.
Mm-hmm.
You can't, when you get 80, you can't do what you did when you were 20 if you live that long. So don't expect it. But ain't nothing in the world like love. And you can love a person from your heart and take care of a person. And that don't have to be the main reason that you discover. Because all of us might have a sick day one time. And I tell these young men, you know, cherish your women. Cherish your women. And, you know, I just recently got hit to this wise fool. And I looked at a clip of him the other day on YouTube, and he's a hell of a con artist.
Oh,
he's a hell of a con. Oh, yeah. You know, I said, well, who is this fool? You know, because I really hadn't delved into him. But this man is just like a Pied Piper to the black women.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. He's just like a Pied Piper. He was leading these sisters. It was him and this other guy. I can't think of his fool name. He do the Scientology stuff. I can't think of his name. Oh, Ron Hubbard.
They're all
around him. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Same flavor, different label.
Mm.
He do the same thing. And we have to be aware of these people that come with these I can do it myself situations, because we have to realize where we come from. We have to realize who we are. We have to realize that they're outcasts. They have been outcasts.
Yeah.
And we can't
Brother Brown,
I
want to play this.
I want to hear. Oh, yeah, I want to hear that clip.
Dr. Francis Press Wilson. So let me share this clip and also a Michelle Alexander clip. All right. Dr. Francis Press Wilson, speaking on Tim Wise.
Who are you? You don't know? Don't tell me Negro. Oh, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? What language did you speak then? What was your name? It couldn't have been Smith or Jones.
See, I'm not talking about Tim Wise. I know of him. He is talking about white privilege. I'm talking about the system of racism, white supremacy. And interestingly, yes. I have been informed that Mr. Wise said that Dr. Frances Welsing is, you know, her discussion is pseudoscientific bullshit.
Really?
This is fascinating because he not only says he's white, but he says he's a racist. You see, so if he identifies himself as white and a racist, then he is supposed to be putting down a black person who has talked about what racism, white supremacy is. See, talking about white privilege is not talking about the demographic and the genetic motivation for white people, for why people who classify themselves as white seek to have privilege and seek to dominate. You see, so he goes off talking about white privilege, and then people who classify themselves as white and will fund him as a white person who goes around talking about this. You see, but dismissing a person like Neely Fuller or dismissing someone like myself as black people who have analyzed this problem. You see, it would be like Jewish people going to a German and asking the German people to define and discuss anti-Semitism. You know, that's ridiculous. But anyway.
I'm glad you brought that to my attention because he, in watching him and listening to him off and on, it brings clarity that he was coming through the back door then trying to gain favor of our people, which is an old trick, to try to get them to see his side, to maybe side with him to show, look, our people are mean, and then at the same time downplaying what you've done in study. So that brings to light what people have to read into, just like the books, just like the ball games, just like the distractions that they could use, which is a learned behavior to have people believe or think they believe that you're on their side. And I want to take that up a notch after the quick break, because this is something that I would hope people have their pens and papers while we've been discussing this to take notes, because I'm not going to entertain any calls, family, only because Dr. Wilson's plethora of information does not need many interruptions at this point. So I appreciate your energy listening. We're going to take a quick minute or two break. I want to see you on the other side with Dr. Frances Cress Wilson.
Now, that was Dr. Frances Cress Wilson speaking on Tim Wise. Now, I want to make sure Delta is with us. Delta, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, good, because you know what? I have this Michelle Alexander clip for you, because I know you did raise the question, you know, what can we do? And I think that Michelle Alexander, I think that this is the clip where she gives a little insight as to, like, what's going on and how we see things, and we have to, like, really understand the whole system at play here. So this is a good clip. I want to share this one. So everybody just hold tight. And let me get this clip up.
Some of you may think you have some idea of how bad it is, how discriminatory, how brutal, how the system is rigged, but you don't really know the half of it, just like I once thought I knew, but didn't. So if you don't really know the role the drug war has played in quintupling our nation's prison system, if you don't know that whites are just as likely to use and sell drugs as people of color, if you don't know all about the financial incentives that have been given to state and local law enforcement, millions of dollars paid to warring law enforcement agencies, sheer numbers of drug deaths, and if you're confused and think that maybe the various wars that have been declared on poor communities of color, the war on crime, the war on drugs, have been focused on rooting out violent offenders or drug kingpins, and if you don't know that the overwhelming majority of people arrested and swept into the system have been arrested for relatively minor crimes. And if you don't get that this system operates practically from cradle to grave, targeting young people at very young ages, often before they're old enough to vote, stopping, frisking, searching them, when all they may be doing is heading home with some Skittles in their pocket. Would it please read my book? You don't know that the current system of mass incarceration can be traced back to segregationists who once chanted segregation forever and then changed their tune with the passage of the Civil Rights Act and began chanting law and order and built a get tough movement, a movement designed by pollsters and political strategists who found that thinly veiled promises to get tough on them, a group not so subtly defined by a race, could be enormously successful in appealing to poor and working class whites. If you don't know about the Southern strategy, if you don't know about racial code language, and the use of welfare and crime as a means to break the Democratic Party in the South and build a new Republican majority, and if you don't know about how this backlash emerged at precisely the same moment that work was vanishing, disappearing from inner city communities due to deindustrialization and globalization, leading to waves of joblessness and the economic collapse of inner city communities and rising crime, creating a perfect storm. Or if you're operating under some delusion that the Democrats have been the better angels, if you don't know that it was President Bill Clinton who mastered the game of using federal resources, and that it was his administration, a Democratic administration, that escalated the drug war far beyond what his Republican predecessors even dreamed possible. If you don't know how the U.S. Supreme Court eviscerated Fourth Amendment rights and immunized the system from judicial scrutiny for racial bias, if you don't know this history, if you have some trouble connecting the dots between slavery, Jim Crow, and mass incarceration, then please educate yourself. I wrote my book in the hopes that it would be a tool, but there are many, many other good tools, excellent books and resources. Read Angela Davis's book, Are Prisons Obsolete? Read Robert Blackman's book, Slavery by Another Name. Read Paul Butler's book, Let's Get Free. Read Christian Parenti's book, Lockdown America. Read Prison Profiteers, Who Makes Money Off of Mass Incarceration. Read Brian Stevenson's book, Just Mercy. And if you're an academic, you'll especially appreciate the data and analysis in Bruce Western's book, Punishment and Inequality. Outstanding book. Read Marie Gottschall's book, Caught, The Prison State and the Lockdown of American Politics. I mean, I could spend all night describing the problem and telling you what to read, to learn about it, and the many different valid and competing perspectives that have been offered. But in the short time I have here tonight, I don't want to spend all my time describing the problem and telling you what to do, to learn all about it. I want to take this time to challenge us, to wrestle with the question of what is required of us as people who are dedicated to racial and social justice at this moment in our history, 50 years after Selma. What now in our struggle for justice, in this era of mass incarceration? And I must say that in reflecting on this question, I find that I have little patience now for the politics and business as usual. I no longer believe that this system will die a death of a thousand little cuts, a little reform here, a little reform there. I no longer believe it. And what we've seen is that systems of racial and social control adapt too easily to minor reforms, and in fact have the capacity to be reborn in new forms, tailored to the needs and constraints of the time.
Harriet Tubman began her life in the bonds of slavery, but lived her life helping others achieve their freedom.
She really helped Black people have a sense of self, a sense of freedom, and a sense that, you know, slavery was not right.
Araminta Harriet Ross was born into slavery around 1820 in Dorchester County, Maryland. As a child, she was loaned out to different plantations. By the time she turned 12, she was working in the fields. When she was a young teen, she suffered a severe injury which would affect her for the rest of her life.
A slave owner threw a metal weight at another slave and accidentally hit her in the head. For the rest of her life, she suffered epilepsy, terrible headaches, but she also had these strange visions, which she ascribed to God communicating to her. And she took these visions as a symbol of her mission, like Moses, to go and free her people.
In 1844, she married John Tubman, who was a free Black man, a fairly common occurrence in Maryland. Harriet was determined to escape her life of slavery, and in 1849, she finally did it. She risked her life by making her way from Maryland to Philadelphia. She followed the North Star and used the so-called Underground Railroad to make it to freedom.
Lord, I'm a pilgrim.
The Underground Railroad was an organized group of free Black, white, and Christian abolitionists who helped slaves escape to the North. Harriet had made it to the Promised Land. No one would have blamed her if she never returned to the South, but she desperately wanted to free her family. She made perilous trips back to free her two brothers, her sister, and her sister's two children. When she made a third trip to get her husband, she found he had taken another wife. Instead of returning with her husband, she saved more slaves.
Not only did she escape slavery and achieve freedom for herself, but she went back down into the South to bring freedom to dozens of other slaves.
Harriet was clever as she was brave, figuring out countless tricks to bring many slaves to freedom over the next several years.
The fact that she developed these paths and trails that took people through the country, and they traveled at night and they used quilts to have secret codes and know the paths, and then to bring people north across the Mason-Dixon line into Ohio to find freedom. So she was a pioneer and I think a very, very strong woman.
Her legendary status as an Underground Railroad conductor earned her the nickname Moses.
Well, I think Harriet Tubman's name, Moses, you know, comes from Moses from the Bible, leading people to freedom. And it's a very, very proper name, I think, for her, and one that she definitely lived up to.
In 1850, things became more dangerous for Harriet when the Fugitive Slave Act was passed. Instead of being a free woman, she was now a fugitive. She continued to free slaves, but now guiding them to Canada so they could truly be free. From 1851 to 1857, Harriet lived mostly north of the border in St. Catharines, Canada. She continued to make trips to Maryland twice a year to save more slaves. Besides her work as a liberator of slaves, Harriet spoke in support of anti-slavery and women's rights. Her efforts made her a wanted woman with a bounty on her head, but she was never turned in. She aided abolitionist John Brown with his plans for the raid on Harper's Ferry. During the Civil War, the government asked her to help the Union cause by organizing a network of spies among Black men in the South.
Not only was she known as the Great Liberator, but she also assisted the Union Army, going down on patrols and advising Union officers on how best to attack the South.
Out in the trenches, she also helped Colonel James Montgomery disrupt Southern supply lines, which resulted in the freedom of hundreds of slaves. After the war, Harriet dedicated herself to establishing schools for freed men in South Carolina. Even though she couldn't read or write, she understood the value of education. In her later years, Tubman worked with her friend, Susan B. Anthony, to support the cause of women's suffrage.
Harriet Tubman is relevant today, not only for her work in terms of racial justice, but also in terms of women's rights. After the Civil War, she became an outspoken supporter for the suffrage movement. Get women the right to vote.
To help make ends meet and continue to help the causes she believed in, she worked on a book called Themes in the Life of Harriet Tubman. In 1908, she established a home for older poor African Americans in Auburn, New York, which she moved into in 1911. She lived there till her death in 1913 from pneumonia. She was buried with full military honors.
I was young, but I remember.
Harriet Tubman, you know, has a lot of significance for Black people, particularly in the age of Obama, because she kind of started the liberation of Black people, you know, in the days of slavery, and really set the path of civil rights in the United States.
Harriet Tubman's bravery and determination allowed her to accomplish incredible things throughout her amazing life.
From Galilee.
She is someone that you cannot forget. She is someone that really kind of changed our perception of what equality and freedom and liberation and civil rights mean.
The hour of birth.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
Okay, and so we just listened to a clip on Harriet Tubman, the great honorable Harriet Tubman, as well as before that, Michelle Alexander speaking on the system and how the system works against us. Discussion around that. King B is back with us. Hey, King B. I was wondering what happened to you. I was just about to text you. And Brother Brown, Delta.
Yeah, I'm here.
Mother Hattie, we're back.
Hey.
Hello.
Hey. I'm here too.
Yeah,
at time, I'd like to give two women stars that I like.
Please.
I actually have three. One is here in Minnesota. James knows her too. Anyway, I'll start with our most recent sister, the Million Woman March founder and originator.
Yes.
Simply because there's going to be a 20-year commemoration of the Million Woman March in 2017. So, just briefly, and I'm reading from Melana Karenga's Black History book, Introduction to Black History, and it says the Million Woman March was held at the Benjamin Franklin Parkway in Philadelphia, October 25th. 1997, it grew out of the extended discussion among women activists on the need to emerge and energize the lives and struggles of Black women in a manner and on a scale similar to the Black men in the Million Man March. And the leading organizer, which was Philae Empress Chinitsin, but there was that came out of that, the committee put forth a 12-point platform, which included a wide range of, and here I should have gotten better light, immediate and ongoing concerns. Number one, national support, a probe into the CIA's participation and its relation to the influx of drugs into the American, African American community. Two, the development and the completion of the Black Independent School. Three, the formation of a progressive mechanism and the development and advancement of Black women leaving in the penal system. And I have number four, the development of health facilities that are therapeutic and a treatment for major emphasis on preventative medicine. Five, the formation of a rites of passage, and that would be for a center for academics. Six, the further development of the Black woman to become professionals, entrepreneurs, and our physicians. Number seven, further development of mechanisms that will assist Black women in transitional experiences. Eight, the examination of human rights violations of African-American women and their efforts and effects. Nine, the development of programming that will bring about a sincere and respectable environment that will focus on the necessary interaction with our youth. 10, the formulation of progressive mechanism to combat homelessness and related problems. 11, the development of mechanisms to prevent gentrification of our neighborhoods. And 12, the reclaiming of our elders' rights who are entitled to the development of appropriate programs and support systems that will ensure that their quality of life is maintained and enhanced and preserved. And so that is the Million Woman March founder, sole founder, she says. However, this Black Studies book has it a little bit different. And so she and I talked about that a little bit. So that's one of my favorite people in today's age. And then my next one I want to give you is Flo Kennedy. And I know Kent and all those East Coast guys know about Florence Kennedy, feminist civil rights advocate and flamboyant gadfly. And she died at 84. And Florence Kennedy was a lawyer and a political activist whose flamboyant attire and sometimes outrageous comments drew attention to her fierce struggle for civil rights and feminism. She died on Thursday in a Manhattan apartment. This is like a newspaper article out of, I think this is from New York Times. At the age of 84, it's kind of like the announcement of her death. So, and she was known to everyone as Flo, and she was recognizable everywhere in a cowboy hat and pink sunglasses. She was one of the first Black women to graduate from Columbia Law School, where she was admitted after threatening a discrimination suit. She fought in the courts and on the streets for abortion rights, represented Black Panthers, was founding member of the National Women's Political Caucus, and led a mass urination by women protesting the lack of women restrooms at Harvard. If you found the cause for the downtrodden of somebody being abused someplace by God, Florence Kennedy would be there. Former Mayor David N. Dinkins of New York said that People magazine in 1974 called her the biggest, loudest, and indisputably the rudest mouth on the battleground where feminist activists and radical politics join in mostly common sense. Friends like Gloria Steinem revealed in her razor-sharp wit, Miss Kennedy would respond that it depends on everything. Mary Wilson, president of Miss Foundation, called her one of the most wonderfully outrageous pioneers of feminism in America. Florence Rae Kennedy was the second of five daughters, and she was born February 11th, 1916, in Kansas City, Missouri, my hometown. Her father was a Pullman porter and later owned a taxi business. He once stood up with a shotgun to members of the Ku Klux Klan who wanted to drive him from a home he had bought in a mainly white neighborhood. In her autobiography, Color Me Flow, Her Hard Life and Good Times, 1976, she said her parents almost never criticized their daughters. So, wow. I think she is an amazing woman. And actually, there's a sister getting ready to kind of put her back out there because she was one of those women that had the courage to take on and represent the Black Panther in the court. And it was just like, I thought, wow, I'm learning about more people all the time. Amazing women. Amazing women.
I'm not familiar with Florence Kennedy, and so thank you so much for enlightening me on her.
She was a firebrand.
Yeah. She had a lot of courage, and I mean, that cowboy, you know, Kansas City is a cow town. Everybody dressed up like cowboys, you know. So.
And so some books, in reference to her, a book that she either wrote, Color Me Flow, Sisterhood is Powerful, Sex Discrimination in Employment, An Analysis and Guide for Practitioner and Student. All right. You said you had another one, Mother Hattie?
Yes, and I have to mention Nellie Stone Johnson, pioneer here, and Mr. Brown said, I know you're going to say it, Mr. Brown, but she was one of the founders of the DFL party here in the state of Minnesota, and she worked with very closely with the giants of the likes of Walter Mondale and Hubert Humphrey, and I trained in under her in the state of Minnesota, and she was one quite like Flo. She called you any day. Oh, that's a handkerchief head wearing.
And what's her name? You said Nell?
Nellie Stone Johnson.
Nellie Stone.
Black woman. She often gave me stories about her childhood, and she talked about people that were like Ida B. Wells that her family frequently entertained. And so they were in this whole movement around in this area, too, of civil rights. And she just was an astonishing woman. And I think she passed when she was 92, 93. And she stayed with me for a little while as she was making some transitions from her apartment into a assisted living facility. And so I just learned so much from this woman. And James knows her. James kind of trained in under her as well. And so oftentimes the three of us would meet out and have coffee and talk about things. And so she was just an amazing, amazing woman. So she has a school here named after her, Nellie Stone Johnson. And she has a scholarship fund. Actually, her scholarship fund dinner is this Friday. So Nellie Stone Johnson, Florence Kennedy, and Empress Chi, my three favorites for the night.
All right. So what, Delta, who do you have? You have anybody you want to highlight tonight?
I do.
Thank you, Candy. I don't know what Delta doing.
Anybody mention Queen Mother Moore?
Not yet, but she's definitely one, too.
Queen Mother Moore, absolutely.
Queen Mother Moore was one of my mentors. Her full name was Audrey Moore, but she was widely known as Queen Mother Moore. She would wear these, looked like dozens of bangles on her arms, forearms, and she wore this magnificent gele, African gele. She was a lieutenant under Marcus Messiah Garvey. And she mentioned when Garvey finally came to New Orleans, he said, I would have been here sooner, but your police chief had made it difficult for me to get in town. So she said she stood on a chair and pulled out her two pearl-handled pistols and yelled out, "Speak, Garvey, speak." And she said she always wore these pistols crisscross on her belly. And she was one of the inspirations in my life because she gave me a one-on-one. She rode in my car when we escorted Mark, a member of parliament in Kenya, from Kennedy Airport to now defunct a restaurant called Wells up in Harlem. And I was so impressed with her fire of that she gave off, her knowledge of soul of our black folks, soul of black folks. And she always said, "Children, you're too slow.
Too slow.
Too slow." And she said that we are suffering from oppression, psychoneurosis. She said that was explaining damage done to our brains. The white man didn't tell us, but we still suffer from it today. And when you look at a multitude of blacks willing to follow and cast their lot, I say in church, with a woman who is named Hillary Clinton, that never, never showed that they were friends to black folks, and how black folks are salivating to vote for her come November. And we are so psychologically damaged. We are the only race that will reward their enemy and punish their friends. There's no record that this woman, Hillary, and her husband Bill was friends to us. But Queen Mother Moore, if she was around today, I could hear her voice now saying, "Children, you are slower than ever." You know, we just don't get it. And she was always one. She stood with Adam Clayton Powell Jr. He was under crisis with the Tungus. And when the leaders in Harlem had turned their backs on him, she was right there at his side. And she didn't falter. She stood her ground. And this is she and her late sister would have me up to her farm. It was an abandoned farm. And she wanted to turn it into a campus for black folks being detoxed from Western influence. It was called Mount Addis Ababa, after the capital of Ethiopia. And I almost broke my foot trying to put one of the rafters on this roof of this building that she had wanted to use as one of our learning centers. And she was just a remarkable woman that, unfortunately, family members didn't see it that way. So they let her die in a nursing home when she wanted to come home to die.
Who left her there?
Her family.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Her granddaughter was a regular on my bus route when I was driving transit in New York City. And I said, your beloved grandmother would want you to carry the torch. She said, because she looked just like her grandmother. She said, "Yeah, I know. But she wasn't ready to do that." So, we don't have these strong sisters that both dishes that have ever made that statement, like Queen Mother Moore or Ida B. Wells or Harriet Tubman. You got to meet sisters that, unfortunately, brothers as well, are happy being corporate Negroes. And at a time when we really need to be fully clear about why are we still having difficulty understanding who our friends are and who our enemies are. And that Queen Mother Moore, she gave me a one-on-one, and I would never forget, she left, as I said, an indelible impression on me that would live with me until I died. She thought so much of me to talk to me. We hours of the night, I have a property upstate New York. And
Hey, Kimby, hold on just a second, because we're going to have a part two of this show, because I really want to get this Ida B. Wells clip in, just a little bit of this. Yes, okay. So let me play this. This is a clip on Ida B. Wells, because she was mentioned tonight, so let's just share This clip on her, one of my favorites, also Kennedy.
Hey.
The great Ida B. Wells.
Bearing strange fruit that I don't need, and blood at the roots, black bodies swinging in the silent breeze, strange fruit hanging. From the poplar trees, pastel seeds, oh, gazing down, them be bold night, and the twisted mouth of magnolia
I've decided instead of doing a video every Monday, Wednesday, or Friday with a new trivia question, I'm just going to make it so that on Fridays, a new trivia question is given, and then you have until the next Friday to actually answer it. So in that particular spin of time, not only will people have a chance to answer the question and enter the giveaway if they want, but they'll also be able to see the hint, which I'll leave by mid-Wednesday or Tuesday each week. And I'll just make it so that each individual the Congress on February 2nd, 1948, requesting that it take up several civil rights measures, including an anti-lynching law, being that nearly 4,000 black people were lynched between Reconstruction and the mid-1960s. Which black activist campaigned and wrote multiple pamphlets exposing white violence against blacks and anti-lynching in the American South, lynching in the American South? An answer to this particular question, which most of you got right before I even gave the hint, was Ida B. Wells Barnett. And this is one of my favorite black activists of all time, so I was really happy that so many people knew of her without having to have any type of prompting. So kudos to you guys. And in the case of Ida B. Wells, she was born in 1862 in Holly Springs, Mississippi, and she was born right before the Emancipation Proclamation was signed. So she was actually a slave upon birth, and then a few months later, she got free along with her parents, out of James and Lizzie Wells, who were very prominent in the Republican Party after they got free from slavery. And her father was actually one of the first individuals to bring about Rust College, or what's now known as Rust College, but during his time would have been called Shaw University. And in the case of Shaw University, he sat on the board of trustees, and it was also a place where Ida B. Wells studied up until the age of 16. And when she was 16, her parents actually died from yellow fever, so she had, along with her siblings, to move to Memphis, Tennessee to live with her aunt. And while she was there, she actually incurred the Summit Train incident that most people know about when they speak of Ida B. Wells. And in this particular case, Ida B. Wells was traveling on the Chesapeake and Ohio Railroad Company, and she was traveling from Memphis to Nashville, where she attended Fisk University and also where she ended up teaching, because that's what she majored in. And during that time on the train, she was asked by a white man to remove herself from her seat so that he could sit down. She said, "I refused," saying that the forward car closest to the locomotive was a smoker, and as I was in the ladies' car, I proposed to stay. The conductor tried to drag me out of the seat, but the moment he caught hold of my arm, I fastened my teeth in the back of his hand. I had braced my feet against the seat in front and was holding to the back, and as he had already been badly bitten, he didn't try it again by himself. He went forward and got the baggage man and another man to help him, and of course, they succeeded in dragging me out. And what really gets me about this particular quote is, what you have to remember about this particular time in American history is that slaves haven't been free for the longest time. But Ida B. Wells, as an individual, knew that she deserved more respect than she was being given, and she wasn't going to ask nicely, she wasn't going to pander to the people who were trying to get her out of the seat. She was going to stand up for herself in that moment, and she wasn't going to wait until afterwards.
And this is exactly what she does when she goes ahead and she sues this particular railroad company. And she did win the particular case where she got $500, but the railroad company itself actually appealed to the Tennessee Supreme Court. And the Tennessee Supreme Court went ahead and they may I be well pay back not only the $500 she had won, but also $200 in damages. So it was about a total of $700 that I'd be well paid to pay to the railroad company. And the railroad company sued her because in their minds, they felt that she had sort of premeditated this particular attack, even though she was asked to get out of her seat. And the individual in question sued her off the train. But they felt like they had been humiliated. And this is something that she as an individual, being that she was Black, had planned. That actually what started I.D. Wells on her path to activism. And her activism took two forms, which was teaching and also journalism. In the case...
This just might be the most important list for the 21st century Afro-descendant woman. What up, African world? It's your boy, Home Team Man. I'm back at it with another video of African history, culture, and worldview. And today I want to talk about the top 10 queens in African history. To begin, this is not a popularity contest. So the standard of this list is not solely based on the queen's popularity, but many other factors like power, influence, and overall impact on African history. Let's begin. Coming in at number 10, we have Queen Nefertiti. Honestly, the only reason she made this list is because I pretty much couldn't ignore her. Her popularity has certainly stood the test of time, and that is greatness in and of itself. But she also passed my other specifications. Nefertiti's husband is pretty much known for ridding Egypt of all of its gods and advancing the idea of monotheism with the worship of the supreme god, Aten. Although he is largely credited with this, Queen Nefertiti played a large role in maintaining this idea in support of her husband. She was literally a part of one of the largest religious revolutions in Egyptian history, outside of the 25th dynasty Nubian kings. On top of that, she was well known for her beauty. Number 9, we have Queen Gudi. Now, virtually no one knows about Queen Gudi, largely because Western scholars pretty much ignore her. But Gudi was a legendary Jewish queen that's known throughout African oral history. She's largely believed to have come from the Sodomo people of southern Ethiopia. Now, Gudi single-handedly destroyed the Aksumite Empire, located in northern Ethiopia. She burned down churches, she destroyed monuments, and she almost eliminated the entire royal family of Aksum. Even today in the Ethiopian countryside, Ethiopians speak of her reign as queen. She's widely known throughout Ethiopian oral history, but even the Arab scholar Ibn Hakel spoke about Queen Gudi. He states, and I quote, "The country of the Habasha has been ruled by a woman for many years now. She has killed the king of the Habasha, who was called Hadani. Until today, she rules with complete independence in her own country and the frontier areas of the country of the Hadana in the southern part of the Habasha. She's one of the few African queens that literally struck terror in the hearts of indigenous African people. Now that's power." Number 8, we have Queen Amina. Queen Amina was a legendary warrior queen of the Hausa people in northern Nigeria. The earliest account of Queen Amina proclaims that she was the first to bring about civilization amongst the Hausa people. She was widely known for her military exploits and extending Hausa rule and influence in different regions.
So we are certainly going to have a part 2 on this, because I mean, we could just go on and on the brilliance of African women. So, but let's take some closing comments from some of you. Delta's back with us, and let's see, is King D still here with us? Brother Brown, I know Brother Brown can share some comments.
You played that clip from Michelle Alexander.
Yes. Yeah.
And I did some research, because I bought her book, New Jim Crow. But mm-hmm. I was just want to share this with the listening audience. the senator that helped Michelle Alexander program was the same senator. He was a Jewish senator from, I think it was Cleveland, Ohio. He was the same one that wrote the laws to take the children away from the grandparents. And when I saw that, you know, we have to be very careful who back these people that are in our community, who we give, you know, who we give them credibility to, because a lot of them, especially in the political arena, you know, because you're a Democrat, we have to realize where the Democratic Party came from. And we jump on this Democrat bandwagon, and we jump on this Republican bandwagon. I mean, we need to understand, you know, just like Mother Hattie was talking about feminism. People don't take this the wrong way. We need to start incorporating male and female. We need relationships. We need to work together. We don't need to be separate. We need to unify ourselves. The black man and the black woman need to unify themselves because we have children. They need to set examples. The feminist movement was one of the worst movements orchestrated by white women to destroy the black man, to destroy the relationship of the black man and the black woman. And we don't need to feed into that today. That's my opinion only then.
Because thank Gloria, you, Brother Brian.
Gloria Steinem and all them people, you know, we have to look at what held at the black woman court and the black men when the separate issues came about with the welfare laws back in the 60s, the food man.
Yeah, we need to have a whole show on that one.
That's
a good topic.
Yeah, and you know, we have to be very, very careful of how people come to us, you know. And, you know, it's just that like Dr. Wilson and Tim Wise, you know, and what he said about her. I wish I had really said that about her when she played.
I would
check him out. I would have a conversation with him.
Hey, Brother Brown, but it's a little bit past 11, so we need to wrap it up. Let me get the last comments in. Mother Hattie, do you have any closing comments? Or Delta?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm mute. Are you there?
Yes.
I'm so sorry. I was just talking. I always put mine on mute when I'm not talking, so I don't, you know, your paper. So, here we go. This is, I'm hearing, I keep hearing something cut in and out here. I don't know what it is, but I wanted to just say briefly, this is an explanation for why we behave the way we do, and it's this off of Lee's show. During the enslavement period of blacks in America, there was the Meritorious Manumission Act of 1710, and it was enacted in Virginia. It was a legal act of freeing a slave for good deeds, as defined by the national public policy, and could be granted to a slave who would do one of the four things. Number one, the slave who saved the life of a white person. Number two, the slave who protected the property of a white person. Number three, the slave who invented something from which a white person could make a profit.
Mm-hmm.
And number four, the slave who informed, squealed, or snitched on his own people who plot any revolt or break free of slavery. And that is the Meritorious Manumission Act of 1710.
1710. It's been going on for a long time. Thank you.
It explains it all to me.
Mm-hmm.
Why they do what they do, even though they think they're out of slavery.
Mm-hmm.
Brothers and sisters will still need to do these things here to feel good about themselves rather than just be free in your mind. Be conscious.
Yeah.
And so when we're not free in our minds, then we don't have a problem going around shooting other people. We don't have a problem when somebody shoots us and nothing's done about it. We may fuss and complain, but we just feel powerless. And we ask these questions like, you know, what can we do and what do we need to do and all of these things. But there's a reason, and it's not one answer. It's very, very complicated. I want to read Women United statement right before we close out. We denounce the vicious attacks on Black women we have been plagued with historically and most recently. As human beings, we deserve equality, inclusive of equal protection and justice under the law and other entities. The most recent vicious attacks and murders of Black women are deplorable. After many instances of atrocities drastically affecting Black women, a plan of action must be adopted and implementation of those actions to cease and desist the brutal attacks and murders of Black women in America. These are unconscionable actions occurring in a country that considers itself a civil society. A call for all women's groups and organizations everywhere is being put forth to take action now, with the aim being the protection of humanity. This is the statement of Women United, founded by our very own Mother Hattie. And you can contact Women United by going onto the webpage at womenunited777.org. That's womenunited777.org. I want to thank all of you for tuning in tonight. Thank you, Brother Brown. Thank you, King B, Delta, Mother Hattie. Thank you, callers. And I will call you from Spokane. Thank you so much. Please call back in. We will be back on Wednesday for part two of this show. So peace and good night.
Good night. Peace.
Good night. On Wednesday, I want to play this clip. Speaking about how our young girls are attacked in school by these resource officers. So we're going to tie all of this into the prison to pipeline, the whole prison to pipeline, preparing our children for prison. So stay tuned, and we will be back on Wednesday.
Okay.